I'm Wendy Bergen. I'm just a regular mom with a husband, a bunch of kids, and some dogs. And I'm the founder of Joyfully Prepared, a business dedicated to teaching busy moms skills like gardening, food preservation, natural remedies, and more, so they can take care of themselves through developing talents, supporting their families with confidence, and saving money. I've rolled down the mountain of accomplishment so many times that I have skinned knees, grass in my teeth, and sticks in my hair. All of these mistakes have actually allowed me to become more confident in my knowledge and skills. I'm eager to learn and strive to create a space where people want to learn. Oh, I'm not perfect. In fact, someone once described me as the queen of preparedness, but normal, without scaring people. Whether it's canning, gardening, emergency preparedness, or anything else, I teach others to feel confident in learning it. I can guarantee that after you've listened to this episode, that you will be transformed. Yep, that's the word I'm going to go with, transformed. You will be transformed. Now, transformation doesn't have to be this big, giant metamorphosis. It can be a simple thought that changes the way you think and the way you act. And that is transformative. It can be incremental. It can be giant, that is true. But more often than not, transformation comes in increments. And I can guarantee that this podcast episode will do that very thing. You will understand a little bit more how important your influence is on yourself, on those you love dearly, and in your community and your professional life, if you have one. But you're going to love this podcast episode. I can't wait for you to listen to it. Hi, this is the Joyfully Prepared podcast, and I'm your host, Wendy Bergen. And today, I am really excited to introduce you to my guest, Matthew Brackett. And I'm going to let him introduce himself and tell you what he wants you to know about him.
Thank you, Wendy. Joyfully Prepared. I like that. I'm joyfully unprepared. Matthew Brackett, I'm the 10th of 13 children from small town New England. And my parents have since passed away. And I left home at an early age, at the age of 18, on a mission to serve people. That brought me into formal religious ministry. I was in that environment for 30 years, only in active ministry as a Catholic priest. Part of that brought me to the Navy as a chaplain and staff officer. And I was also able to work in a bunch of different countries, in Italy, Ireland, in Colombia, in Chile, in South America. I'm presently living in Mexico, so all my services are bilingual, in English and Spanish. And so my focus really is leadership, what I call a holistic approach to leadership, to work with people in impactful positions of influence at that intersection between the personal and professional, how they lead themselves, and then how they exercise leadership, authority, power, influence on those around them, whether that be in their inner circles, their inner intimate circles, or whether that be professionally in an organizational context. So that's really what I do. My motto is to lead better, to love better, and live better, because I think that leadership is love, essentially, and love is leadership. And it's one of the greatest abilities that we have as human beings is to love. But it's also one of the most challenging things that we can also do.
Yeah, I agree. So
I'm passionate about the human person. I'm passionate about the complex beauty of the human person. And so that's why I do what I do. I left formal ministry a few years ago. I did a master's degree in the psychology of leadership. And then I started my own practice of coaching, consulting for people in leadership positions. And then speaking, what I would call education, to be a speaker in workshops and speeches and conferences around all the different subtopics of human development and leadership. So that's, in a nutshell, who I am and what I do and why I do what I do.
That's awesome. I love that. So you were talking about leadership. That's, you said leadership is love. Am I correct? Is that what you said?
Well, that's what I said. Yes. That's not really how I define it, but that's one of the ways I would say.
And that's why I wanted to ask, will you define leadership, what your definition of leadership is, and how leadership is love, what that is to you as well?
Of course. Well, that's such a good question. So I have three definitions of leadership, but they're not all mine. John Maxwell says that leadership is influence. That's the simplest definition, not as academic. I'm going to go over in order. Influence is such a wonderful word. It comes from the Latin influo and fluere, which means to pour into. And I really like that image because really that's what influence is. We're pouring into people, whether we know it or not, unconsciously or through who we are and through how we behave. We are continually pouring into ourselves and we're pouring into those around us. Now that pouring, you know, if I had two glasses here, well, I could pour water, which is life-giving and nourishing, into one glass, and I could pour a toxic liquid into another one. Because our influence can be positive or can be negative, can be life-giving or can be destructive. So the second definition, we're a little bit more academic, is that leadership is a dynamic process. It's a dynamic process between three elements: the leader, followers, and context. And these things are constantly in communication with each other. So the wisdom of a leader is to be able to pay attention to that dynamic process of the followers, and then each of my followers is different. And then this context, which constantly determines how to make decisions and how to lead properly. But anyways, leadership is a dynamic process of influence of one person over others to reach a common goal. So we have a dynamic process of influence and to reach a common goal. Now, there's really, in that definition, there's nothing ethical or moral about it. So it's an amoral definition, meaning that we're not talking about a positive or good common goal or a negative or bad common goal. So according to that, in history, you know, we could have very destructive leaders who were effective, according to that definition, but the goal that they wanted to achieve was destructive and negative. Now, the definition that I like, there's about 380 definitions of leadership out there in all the, so I added to it. As I was writing about leadership and reflecting on it, I added one of my own, which is not, I stand by it, but I would also probably make other definitions depending on the context. So I would say leadership is a dynamic process, but of not only that, but it's a mutual exchange of being and behaving. It starts first and foremost for who we are. Oftentimes when we talk about leadership, we're talking about how we exercise influence, power, authority on others. And we're talking a lot about behaviors, skill sets. But we don't always talk about who we are. And it really starts from there. So it's a mutual exchange of being who I am and how I behave. It's mutual exchange because followers also influence leaders, right? And context influences the leaders. But follower, you know, you just mentioned you had a daughter, right? As you were raising your daughter, didn't she influence you in many ways?
Absolutely.
Sometimes positively, sometimes negative. Exactly. Sometimes she got you upset, sometimes whatever. But it's a mutual exchange of being and behaving, which influences, but also empowers. I think that's important. As healthy leaders, we want to empower ourselves, but we also want to empower those we influence to reach a common goal, but also to reach personal potential. For me, growth is very important in the process. That it's not about how I influence people and how I control, but how I develop and how I grow my people. So that when someone looks back on, you know, for your listeners, if they look back on someone that led them at some point in their life, they're like, you know, I'm a better person because I was on that team. I'm a better person because I was with this person, or this person was my boss or my leader. You know, or people can look back at us and say, I'm a better person because of the way they mentored me, they led. So growth is very important. I think leaders don't often think about that oftentimes it can be, I just want to achieve my goals with or without my people, or in spite of my people, or at the cost of my people. And we want our people to grow in the process. So an extended answer, but I went through that three definitions of influence, and then a more academic definition, and then my own personal definition.
Right.
Now, sorry. Because you asked why, then what about leadership and love?
Yes.
Right? And so love is, there's a lot of definitions, but I'm going to use one from a few centuries ago from a man, a philosopher and theologian called Thomas Aquinas, who said that love is to desire the good of the other. And so, and as we know, if we go back to the Greek, there's like different types of love. Whether it be, you know, a brotherly, sisterly love, whether it be erotic love, whether it be that love of self-giving and self-sacrifice, the different degrees. But I think going back to leadership, when we have power, power is something so sacred, right? And authority is something that's so sacred. Even just, you know, authority, the word from the Latin autoritas, which means like, is like to author something, some to give life to something, right? And so in leadership, we want to be giving life to not only to something, but to someone in the way. And so we have, you know, when people talk about moral authority, that's a one, that's a very powerful thing, because it's almost like, you know, here I'm talking to you. Let's say you were, whatever, you're someone I respect, I look up to. And so because I, because of that respect and trust and confidence, I give you power over me. I give you authority. And so that's like moral authority because of what you represent and who you represent for me. And that's really the most powerful type of authority. And then when we talk about power, it's called referent power. That's now, in an ideal world, we would have legal authority, you know, formal authority, position of authority, and moral authority that would be all together in the same person. But oftentimes it's separate. And we can have people in our lives who have, who don't have a position, a formal position of authority or power over us, but they have a lot of authority and power because of what, because we give it to them. We give that to them over us because of who they, what they represent for us. So going, that was a tangent going back to love.
You're fine.
Because love is, you know, power and authority is used, supposed to be used for the good, then we use that for the good of others. If I am in a form, you know, if I'm a parent, or if I'm a spouse, or if I have a in a professional position of authority and power, I use that for the good of others. I use that for the common good, the good of my people, the good of the organization. Yes, we have organizational goals, but we have to remember we always have people that are instruments to reach those goals. So love in this context, to use power, authority, and influence for the good of others. That's why I would say that leadership is love. And love is leadership, because when we love, it's such a powerful expression of leadership in the way we've been talking about it.
Your definitions just make me so much smarter. Like I'm like I'm so much smarter now. But I feel such I feel emotion as you were talking and discussing, and as you were saying, everybody has influence and everybody has some role of leadership. Regardless of whether I'm a CEO of a company, I'm a mom, I'm a congregant, it doesn't matter. I have authority, I have leadership, I have influence. I would love for you to talk even more deeply about how do we show leadership to ourselves? How do we you talked about influence to be able to pour into, that we pour into ourselves. As the majority of the people that listen to my podcast are women, and we tend to pour into a lot of other things other than into ourselves. Right. And we end up being kind of empty vessels at the end of the day. I'm kind of done at 5 o'clock. It's just kind of like, my vessel is done, I got to go to bed or something, right? So how do we have enough leadership, love, and influence for ourselves to pour that into ourselves?
Thank you, Wendy. And I think I'm going to use an example for myself before I answer that more specifically. Being in ministry, it's very, all of us who are in the service industry, whether that be in the medical industry, whether that be mother. Whether that be religious ministry, it was a lot of you know, for years, just giving and giving and giving and giving, and without realizing it, it was all good intentions, but I lost myself in the process and I burnt myself in the process.
Okay.
And which wasn't good for me, wasn't good for the people that I led, wasn't, in the end, really wasn't good for anybody. Okay. Now it's, sometimes we have to go through that to realize. And I wouldn't wish that on anyone because I went through some very dark places in life, but it's, and but as I look back, I learned a lot in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So that leadership process, first and foremost, begins within us. In other words, we talked about the leader, the follower, the context, and I really like this because that first and foremost is a process that happens inside of me. In other words, I am my leader, I am my follower, and I live in a context. Now, the leader inside of me is what psychologists would call the ideal self. In other words, who I want to be. Right? We all have values, ideals, dreams, visions. Right? That's sort of like the North Star that guides us. And so that's who we're striving to be. And then we have the Wendy of today, right? Or the Matthew of today, right? And that's what we would call the actual self or the follower inside of me.
Okay.
Right? And it's in this context. Now, this context is today. What we're recording on February 13th. But my context is also, I am a woman, I am a mother, I'm a podcaster. These are all these things that help define who I am, pieces of the puzzle of who I am, but also help define, well, how I want to achieve those goals that I have. So anyways, let's... And I just like to say that because when we think of leadership, again, as I said before, we think about the external aspect of leading others, but we don't know if we think about that this process first and foremost starts with inside. And as we all know, sometimes the most difficult person to lead is oneself.
Yes.
And one of the most difficult person to follow is oneself.
That's true.
Okay. So we all, it's something we all struggle with. And I, going back to, you know, to your audience as mothers, wives and mothers, and it's, we have to be careful because we can find what's an escape, what we would call a healthy escape in all my duties of being a mother, a spouse, or a professional, and all these things together. And in that, and it's all unconscious, but in escaping to those comfortable spaces which give me identity, I've abandoned myself in the process. Or I forget about myself because partly because it's, there's this misconception that if when I take care of myself, I'm being selfish.
Right.
And that's a distortion. Or it's because, you know what, I don't know who I am now and I've lost myself in the process and I don't want to go to that closet, you know, where the real me is and open it up and look at myself in the mirror because I wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
I'm just too scared to see what's there. And so I avoid it. And I avoid it in doing all the good things that I am called to do as a mother and as a wife and as a professional and all these other things. That's very natural that we do that. I did that for years. Okay? And it came the point where I had to open up the closet and deal with the mess. Right? This is... Because at some point, that I like to say, sometimes we put things in the closet, whether it be experiences or whether it is we hide them away so that they don't bother us because they're very comfortable. And sometimes there's trauma there that we. But a lot of these things, but when we leave them in darkness, they get worse.
Yeah,
and they begin to create a stench, which no matter how hidden they are. We can't hide them anymore.
Right.
And it begins to influence so many aspects of my life unconsciously. And then we, you know, in activism, this is very common. And there's many ways as human beings that we deal with this pain. But first of all, we avoid it. And then secondly, we can, you know, since the pain is or the stench is somehow there, we try to drown it out with being busy, with caring for other people. We can try to drown it out with other types of behaviors, which addictive behavior, you know, even more addictive behavior, but any sort of substance abuse, any sort of behavioral abuse, where it's just natural that the human, we're going to have those because we're trying to self-medicate. We're trying to ease the pain a little bit. It might be in eating. It might be in alcohol. It might be in drugs. It might be on internet. It might be some sexual activity, which might be a bit distorted, right? But it's all the searching in us as human beings to somehow ease the pain.
Yes.
To somehow find some sort of repose or respite.
Yep.
For our soul. But in the end, it creates sort of like the contrary effect, where it just makes things worse.
Yes.
So I forget where we were coming from with that question. Self-leadership.
Yes.
Self-leadership. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say about that.
How is it, is that the right, sometimes I'm not exactly sure which question I should, how I should start my questions.
Where I said a lot of things. So.
You did. But so it's so going back to the closet, the place where we kind of shove thoughts, fears, disappointments, traumas, you name it. And everybody defines it differently. Everybody feels it differently. I have a couple of daughters who have feelings, like they just feel things. And then I have a daughter who doesn't. She just kind of moves through things, but she still has things that she puts in her closet as well. Right. And I have 7 children, by the way. So, I have a slew. But so we have all feelings and not feelings. All right. You know, all these different interpretations, that's a really good way of explaining things. We interpret the same experience differently depending on who we are. Absolutely. But we all do seem to take this thing and kind of push it away. What happened? Why did that happen? Why do we do that? And do you think that there is, I kind of do, but I'm obviously interested in your point of view. Why do we do that? Is that a cultural thing? Do other cultures do the same thing? And I feel like there's kind of this revolt against that nowadays, that people are trying to express themselves and to be more true to themselves. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
Yes. And I would also want to talk about, you know, how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we do it? I think it's part of who we are as human beings. We want to live in safety. There's something in our brain that wants self-protection, safety. And so we can see these things as threatening. There's also social context, which we want to put on naturally. We all have this facade that we want to put on, give or take, right? Depends on the context. We all have some sort of a mask, right? And sometimes the mask is bigger, sometimes it's less. Because we want to show up or we need to show up in a certain way.
Yes.
But it's so important that we have a space where we can take off the mask. Now, ideally, that's in our intimate relationships.
Right.
But sadly, that can happen sometimes in those spaces. But that would be one place where that could happen. And then another, you know, in what I do through coaching, or whether if you go to therapy or counseling or to a pastor or some sort of religious leader, that there's a sacred space where we can take off the facade and the mask and really, in a confidential, safe space, talk about really who I am. That is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's, I think in society nowadays, there's this big push for that. But there's also a big push that we all have to show up in a perfect way. We're constantly living in that tension.
Mm-hmm.
I think social media has created that as well, because of this, the way people want to show up or pretend to show up, right?
Mm-hmm.
For others. Right. The example, some people look at my social media or whatever, and they're like, "Wow, you're doing great." I was like, "Holy smokes." Like, remember, social media is a facade. Right? things aren't that great. Right? But we're getting there. We're working there. But
that's right.
So this is something that happens to us as humans, something that we do. We want to pay attention to it. And that's what I think is important, is that we, all of us, give ourselves the ability, we exercise that muscle to honestly name things that we're going through, name some of the pains, name some of the joys, and really to name them, because when we name something, we can claim it.
Mm.
Right? And then there's another, you know, we can name it, we can claim it, we can reframe it.
Yes.
In the process, you know, what we're doing right here is so important for us as human beings, is because me by, you know, and imagine if this was a coaching or a therapeutic session, is when I take an experience, a thought, an emotion, and I transform it into words, all of a sudden, I take more ownership of that. And that's a step that sometimes we don't take. We sort of let it simmer inside of us. And I think men will do this a lot more than women, where we have a harder time with this. But in the proper, with the proper person and the proper thing, that we're able to transform that into words, hear ourselves say things, because we, when we do that, we become owners. There's more ownership in what we're living and what we're experiencing. And when we hear ourselves say things, it becomes very powerful, because then it also creates accountability. Whoa, I've come to realize this about myself. I've heard myself say this in a way that I've never said this before. I've never heard myself. I've taken ownership. Now, what do I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for all of us to have that space. Now, sometimes, you know, it's hard for us, because those of us who didn't grow up in an environment where we are used to talking to others about this stuff, it can be very hard. It's a muscle we haven't exercised.
Right.
But also, it can sometimes be a luxury, right? Therapy, counseling, coaching, none of it is, it can be expensive.
Yeah.
Right? And if it's not a formal setting like that, at least we can have someone in our life that we can go to.
Mm-hmm.
That can be that confidential and safe space where we can just be ourselves and
right.
take ownership of whatever we're going through, an accountability partner or whatever it is. There's a lot of support groups that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to happen in a one-on-one context. It can happen and even in a group, safe group context.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, even the 12-step groups, I'm a big promoter of all this because there's so many types.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a safe, anonymous space to talk about whatever you're dealing with. I think we've gone through why we do it as human beings somewhat.
Right.
In some ways, that why it's important that we try to do this better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to deal with these things. And that in the end, it's going to bring a lot of greater well-being to oneself and to our surroundings, to the people that we work with and deal with, beginning
right.
with our relationships, beginning at home, and then into the professional areas.
Right. I want to walk back just a second, and
yes.
I'd love for you to tell me and others that are listening, why is it so important to take ownership of whatever? Why is that so important? Because what I see is a lot of people don't want to be owners of things, and they don't want to be accountable, because that is painful as well.
It is. It's easier not to take
ownership. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's easier not to do it until it's no longer possible, until that whatever it is has a lot more power over us than we want it to have. So part of taking ownership is we want to take away the power of something over us.
Mm.
And the more we leave it to its own little games, it's the more it's going to have power over us, even unconsciously. But I think that's one thing. I say either we deal with stuff or whatever it is going to deal with us.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make a decision.
Yeah.
Those are the certain things. And we all, and I'm, you know, to your listeners, kind of think about whatever in your life you've been avoiding.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's financial situation, whether it's something in relationship, whether it's a conflict that we haven't dealt with, some friction, some tensions, a misunderstanding.
Right.
It's like a little cloud that's hanging over us, and we know it's draining energy. It's affecting us.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to let that grow and just have a lot more power over us than we want it to have, or exercise the muscle of leaning into it and taking ownership of it, mm-hmm. With it, dealing with it. We wanted to let it deal with us.
Right.
Even without realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or do we want to be a bit more intentional about dealing with it? I think that's one of the reasons why it's important, because mm-hmm. really we all want to live life in abundance.
Absolutely.
And when we don't deal with stuff, life ends up living us.
Yeah. And I think it needs to be said too, taking ownership isn't just an automatic thing like, oh, I did that thing, boom. It can take time and bits and pieces kind of fall into place. It doesn't have, it can happen all at once, but more often than not, it's a process. It's in a journey of of little moments that you go, okay, I got it. You know, that type of a thing.
Yes, it is a process. And I do want to go back. You know, when we talked about the closet and putting things away, mm-hmm. there's times in this time that we have to put things away for a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As long as we're like, all right, I'm going to deal with that, but I'll deal with that in a month. I'll deal with that in 6 weeks when I have to finish some other stuff or whatever.
Right. And
I don't have the time or energy right now to deal with it, but I will deal with it. We sort of flag it.
Mm-hmm.
That's also important that happens. But also about the process. And I like to use the image of, you know, of nature. When we go out into nature, we see trees, we see flowers, we see, you know, no matter how much we've advanced as and technologically and whatever, as a human race, trees continue to grow at the same speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's for us as human beings. So
yeah.
Our ability to, even no matter how much we've advanced technologically and all that, we continue to process things at the same pace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to recognize, because often, you know, we're rushed by the rhythm of life nowadays and under a lot of pressures.
Yes.
But we have to remember, and to your point, to what you were saying, that it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes we don't have the patience, right? We want a quick fix. You know, in any sort of therapeutic or coaching journey, it takes time.
Six months
is like a minimum of where I want to see some changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it may take a certain key to unlock that moment of clarity as well. And you may not be ready for it yet. It may not have made itself manifest to you yet. You may not have a piece of knowledge yet. And you have to be, like you said, you have to be patient. And all of a sudden something will click into place and you can go, oh, got it. All right, let's go.
Yes. And there's so many little things that lead to that.
Yes.
You know, using the image of the key, you know, but just the key might be under a bunch of different things. And mm-hmm. we can sort of move those away. And then all of a sudden we have those aha moments.
Right. How do you, I mean, my children, I have one teenager left out of the seven, and I have one of them living at home as well, but one minor teenager left. And I've been on a journey throughout my life, but also throughout my motherhood to help my children. And sometimes they've interpreted that as not helpful at all. Like zero help and negative help. And right. Other times they don't know. And I have one child who really, really likes me at the moment, that kind of a thing. But how do we as parents, how do we help our children when we're still trying to unlock our stuff, when we're still trying to pull our stuff out of the closet and work with it? And they're struggling and they have pain as well. But we may not have the skills just yet. How do we help them?
And I would say that sometimes, especially after a certain age, it's kind of not your place as a parent to be mm-hmm. that catalyst of change. You'd like to be.
Yes.
Because of what you represent as a parent, they're like, no. Right? More distance, better.
Right, so, right.
So there's a few ways to help. One is, I think just think presence is really important, being present. And even though we're dealing with all of our stuff, we can always find that time to be present to our children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, but we have to be careful because there's that, again, where we can be consumed by activity. I feel like if I'm not doing something then there's something, I don't know, I'm not productive.
Right.
Learning to be present. But I think parents might realize that the more I'm present without being rushed by activities, my children might start opening up to me when they feel like I'm not busy doing a lot of other things.
Right.
But there's just a lot to be said for presence. I think that's what a lot of children long for nowadays, is just that mm-hmm. parents be present.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that we have to be doing anything special, just to be around, you know, how to sit in the present. Secondly, I think is as we educate our children, is that we give children permission and possibility to deal with their things.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, other resources, whether it be sports, whether it be clubs, whether it be activities, whether it be other people to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then third, I think that we've also educated them in giving them permission that, hey, it's okay, you know, if you're going through whatever, I don't need to know about it unless it really affects the family or whatever, or there's other consequences. But it's important to, you know, have someone to talk to. And so we've really in raising them that we're facilitating that process that they have other people to deal with this. I think that's, and then even as a parent, and I would say this about any person in leadership, is that when you, in an appropriate manner, but when you maybe talk about some of the things that you've had to deal with over life, or the, some of the ways that you took care of yourself, or that you, people that you had to talk to, the ways that you went about dealing with whatever, you're indirectly, you're giving them permission to do the same. Sometimes as parents and as leaders, we want to come across as always self-sufficient, independent. We got it together. And because we think that the something different is a sign of weakness.
Yeah, true.
You know, and so, but when we talk about vulnerability nowadays, and it's a big buzzword, we could, that's a whole nother tension. But it, I think part of this is just to show that as a parent or as a leader, that I'm human. I make mistakes. I have to deal with stuff. I do it. And in talking a little bit about that in the appropriate manner, I'm giving my children or my followers, I'm giving them permission to do the same. Because if they think you as a parent, you're perfect, so then they're never going to want to talk about their stuff.
Right.
Their challenges. Because they're like, well, I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to be understood. I'm going to be judged because mom or dad are perfect or my leader is perfect. They're never going to understand. Right. Or they're going to, they might judge me.
Yeah. I've also seen, but as a mother, I've also seen my kids know that I'm imperfect. And so they see me on the inside of the house as imperfect, but then on the outside of the house, I pretend, right? We put the mask on and I pretend that I'm perfect. I mean, I really don't, because I'm just always a hot mess. But their interpretation is mom's kind of a hypocrite in a way, right? But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with them recognizing that I'm just a hot mess, that I'm extremely imperfect, and that I really am trying to work through my stuff. And I was, when I was a parent, you know, when I first became a parent, I'm a completely different parent than I am, than I was, you know, 25 years ago. And I should be a completely different type of parent 25 years later, because I've grown.
Sure.
I believe I'm a better parent today than I was 25 years ago, even 5 years ago, hopefully even last year. That's what you were saying, right? That's what leadership is. It's this growth. My children help me grow as much as I help them grow.
Right. Definitely. And I would say the same about myself. I go back. If I went back to the different jobs that I had before, I know now I would do them a lot better.
Yeah.
Right. Because of, we've grown in the process. We've learned a lot about ourselves. I'd still make mistakes, I'm sure. Right.
But different mistakes. Different ones, right?
But I like, you know, and I think, you know, and that's a part of the topic for another day. It's just, you know, leadership mistakes that I've made. And it's important to talk about those, because that creates connection. It creates vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so even you with your children to talk about, it doesn't mean, you know, nowadays mistakes I made, but mistakes I've made in the past, because you're giving a very human level to your kids, especially as they get older. The whole relationship and parenting changes from sort of adult to minor, then to adult to adult, right? We're peers now in the process of life.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely, life can be really fun. It can be really painful, but I do believe that through the struggle that we can, you know, become a better version of ourselves. I think that's part of what pain and struggle is. And like you said, that's a completely different topic that we could probably spend a really long time talking about. But I just want to conclude by saying how grateful I am for you taking your time to be on the podcast, and to, like I said, I just feel like I'm so much smarter now. That didn't take very long.
Well, hopefully we're both at a better place in life after this half an hour.
I hope so. So, Matthew, tell the listeners where they can find out more about you and your services.
Sure. Thank you. So they could, really the easiest place is my website, bracketalliance.com. But they can find me on all social media platforms. Well, not all, but a good number, whether it be TikTok, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, under Matthew Brackett, will find me there. If they like podcasts, then I have a Spotify channel called Matthew Brackett where they can listen to all my, and also a YouTube channel where they can see a lot of the content that I put out.
Great.
So that's where they could find me.
Wonderful. And I'll have all of those links for his socials, his website. I'll have all that in the show notes as well.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Wendy, for the opportunity to be on your show.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Joyfully Prepared. I'm grateful for you and appreciate you inviting me into your life. Please subscribe and tell all your friends about this delightful podcast. Leaving a joyful review would earn you all sorts of karma points too. I invite you to join my free Facebook group at www.joyfulprepgroup.com and join with other like-minded mothers.